Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes, because together we can do it. We really can. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for September 12th, 2012. Folks, I have a great podcast for you today. If you're tuning in for the first time, thank you. You're here on a great, great day. For the entire podcast today, joining me as guest on The Healthy Mind, Dr. David Clark. Dr. Clark is president of the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association and author of the book, They Can't Find Anything Wrong. 7 Keys to Understanding, Treating, and Healing Stress Illness. Dr. Clark is going to talk to us today about just that, stress illness, what we talk about a lot here on The Healthy Mind, this mind-body connection, the fact that our stress, the stress that we deal with, will come out. It expresses itself. It expresses itself in emotions. And for some people, it will express itself in physical symptoms. So Dr. Clark is going to talk with us here shortly about the mind-body connection, stress illness, his experience literally over several decades of treating these disorders, and what to do if you feel like you are struggling with these issues. So you're here on a great, great day, and I am so happy that you are here. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Any questions or comments, you can always email me. My email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. And now, without any further ado, I'm very, very pleased and honored to have Dr. David Clark on The Healthy Mind. Dr. Clark, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you.
No, it's really our pleasure. I really do appreciate it. As I discussed in the introduction, Dr. Clark has had really a lifelong journey, first trained as a physician, a gastroenterologist, and then taking on this mantle of stress illness and really everything having to do with the mind-body connection. So I guess my first question to you would be, how does a physician trained as a gastroenterologist, not really what you think of when you're thinking about mind-body, really turn that into a career and essentially an international authority on mind-body illness? Tell us about that.
Well, it's certainly not what I expected when I went into that profession, and it's almost embarrassing to admit how far I went through my training before I ever recognized that stress was capable of causing physical illness. But I ran into a patient who had foiled the best efforts of 2 different university GI departments at diagnosing her very severe condition. I accidentally stumbled on the fact that she had been through a very severe stress for many years when she was a child, but this was 25 years in the past, and I really had no idea whether such a thing could be connected to her illness in the present day. But very fortunately, there was a psychiatrist on staff at UCLA, where I was in training at that point, who I knew had an interest in this kind of disorder. So I kind of threw up my hands, not thinking that route was going to be very effective. But I got the psychiatrist together with this patient. And much to my surprise, a couple of months later, the patient was completely cured after having been severely ill for 2 years.
Amazing.
And nothing in my training had prepared me for that kind of idea, that you could cure a patient of a severe physical illness simply by talking to them. So in the remaining year and a half of my training, I tried to learn as much as I could from Dr. Kaplan. And then when I went into practice in Portland, Oregon, I used what I had learned from her as a kind of a framework. I still didn't really know what I was doing, but I began seeing half a dozen patients a week with this problem. Again, much to my surprise, that there was so much of this in the gastrointestinal specialty without my having really been prepared for it. And after a few years of doing detailed interviews with people, I began to make sense of what was happening. And it was really my patients who were my teachers, and I got better and better at it. And probably after 3, 4, 5 years, I felt like I'd become proficient at helping people with this. And there was really no one else in the Portland, Oregon medical community who was doing this kind of work. So more and more of those patients began to come my way, and I just got more and more experienced with it.
And that's, I mean, it's a really amazing story to hear. So many questions to ask you about all of this. But I guess the first one is, in that first experience, now I understand that you had spoken to the psychiatrist there, Dr. Kaplan, as you'd mentioned, and that you had seen this change happen. But what do you think it was in you, though, that made such a profound difference, or it had so much profound meaning to you, that you found yourself naturally moving that way in your career path? Why didn't you just say, wow, that was an amazing thing that happened and incredibly interesting, but I'm a gastroenterologist. How was it that this spoke to you so much?
Well, I think there were two reasons. Number one, I wanted to be able to help any patient who came to see me. I didn't want to be hanging a sign outside my door that said, if I can't find out what's wrong with you with one of my endoscopes, then I don't want anything to do with you. Because yes, there are certainly people in my specialty who feel that way. I wanted to be able to take care of everybody. I didn't think it was going to be a very large number of patients, but I wanted to be prepared. And I thought, if I can identify this the way I did with this first patient, I can send them off to a mental health professional and be done with it. It'll be a very easy process, and I'll be able to help this patient fairly straightforward way. Well, it turned out that, unfortunately, most mental health professionals are not experienced with the kinds of issues that can make people physically ill. So a large fraction of patients I sent to the mental health department came back to see me and said, I'm sorry, but I'm still ill. Can you help me? And that was really how I got into it. I made an effort. I'd always had a certain degree of empathy for people who had struggled. I didn't go through any real major struggles in my own personal life, fortunately, but I always seem to have had the ability to understand what it's like to be another person. And so by listening to people, I was able to learn gradually what they needed to get better. Mm-hmm. And it was very rewarding. You know, one of my early cases had been hospitalized at one of the best universities on the West Coast, an average of 4 times a year for 15 years with no diagnosis. And by the time I saw her, I knew what to look for. She's actually the first story in my book. I knew what to look for. We uncovered the hidden stress that was responsible for her condition, and she was cured in a 1-hour conversation.
Isn't that amazing?
And it's the best feeling in the world. You know, I didn't have to put her through any more diagnostic tests. I didn't have to prescribe anything for her. We just had a conversation. And I know you've experienced this yourself, and you know how rewarding it is to have that ability to work with a patient in that way.
Yeah, it really is. But what I really want to impress upon the audience here in Dr. Clark's journey is that even within psychiatry and probably within psychology and therapy, when you were searching for the answers and this was an interest and you wanted to learn more, you know, I came down the road a little bit later as a physician, but even during my training in psychiatry, the emphasis on mind-body back then was nowhere near what it even is since the years I've taken part of that mantle on myself. So I really think it speaks a lot, and it's quite profound that you went to look and find within the communities where you thought you would get help, and not to diminish those individuals in any way, but the emphasis was not really on mind-body. What an interesting journey. I would imagine at times you felt quite alone, and I could certainly understand where your patients were the main place where you learned.
Yeah, there wasn't any course you could take. There wasn't a book you could read. And you're right. I mean, my colleagues, they wondered a little bit about this kind of work that I was doing. They were very glad that I was getting great results with patients they found to be quite frustrating. But at the same time, they would come back to me and they would say, look, you know, you're not doing enough colonoscopies here. And it was, the reason for that was that the patients I was seeing for these problems had already had a colonoscopy. They didn't need another one.
That's right.
So I would just talk to them. But one of the great injustices of all this is that these patients were looked down upon compared to patients with something you could see with your endoscope. And I felt that should not be the case, that we should help these individuals regardless of what the source of their symptoms is.
Yes. And I think certainly in my world in psychiatry, and having really nothing to do with mind-body, but just depression and anxiety, there's quite a bit of hesitancy and stigma to accept that as a diagnosis that can be treated. And I'm not talking about medications, but just a legitimate issue that can be treated. To have something that is not even that domain, that is the GI issues or the gastroenterologic issues, and how people must feel so marginalized when, what if this is my stress and no one's even thinking about that part of it? It is, well, I don't like to get too dramatic, but it feels like, I don't know, it's maddening, but it feels like an atrocity for those of us that are in that field, that no one wants to talk about these things.
Yeah, it's a form of social injustice, to my way of thinking, that, you know, somebody who's got what is really at root a physiologic process going on in their body causing a symptom, and we're not giving it the same respect that we do for other physiologic processes that cause things like ulcers or intestinal inflammation. They should be treated as equally legitimate and receive the same quality of care. And at the moment, they don't, far from it.
Yeah, they don't. And I know that everything you're trying to do, and we'll certainly talk about this as we talk about the PPDA, the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association, in trying to get just the awareness out for the medical community, the therapy community, the patient community, but not that you're just saying this is the only answer, but at least include this when you think about why a person gets sick or gets ill. But we're just trying to punch through, it seems.
Yeah, there's a complete, almost complete lack of awareness with almost no formal training for medical professionals about the fact that this condition even exists. And in the mental health community, there's a school of thought that, yes, there is anger present in people with chronic pain and chronic unexplained symptoms. Yes, there may be depression and anxiety, but they're not thought of as potentially causative.
That's right.
They're not thought of as things that can be primary in the process. And the same with childhood stress, that people have been abused as children or mistreated in other ways as children. It's known that those issues are common in people with chronic symptoms, but they're not understood as being potentially the cause and a great opportunity for successful treatment.
Yeah, it's so true. And we're even just starting to understand this. And maybe this is why there's more acceptance of this, because we understand it more on biological terms now, how emotional symptoms can change physical symptoms in our body, how our emotions can lead to worsening of physical illness. But I don't think we're anywhere near the acceptance of where thoughts, traumas, emotions can lead to physical symptoms. I mean, at least in the sense of an individual person or a patient who's suffering, that it's legitimate. And we are certainly not anywhere near the top of the list for the clinicians who are treating these particular individuals.
Yeah, and it's crazy that that's the case, because everybody's had the experience of feeling a knot in their stomach when they're in a tense situation, or having their face turn red when they're embarrassed by something. I mean, those are simple physical reactions to stress. And these illnesses that we treat, they're simply exaggerated forms of that, more severe forms of that.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that you've coined it in terms of stress illness, and your website at stressillness.com. But tell us a little bit about stress illness, maybe how you came to that term and what that really means to you.
Well, I was looking for a term that patients would be able to accept, that wasn't a negative or pejorative kind of word like psychosomatic that most people don't like to hear. I was looking for something that would emphasize that This is an illness like any other, and that it comes from stress, and that it's a physiologic connection between the two. I think you can have stress illness and still consider yourself to be a mentally strong person, because most of my patients, in fact, are mentally stronger than average. They're simply coping with levels of stress that would bring most of us to our knees. Yes. So that's why I liked that that particular term. But there are a million synonyms for it, as you know. Psychosomatic is probably the oldest and most popular. But again, I rejected that because patients don't like to be labeled with that. And I wanted people to think that they're simply coping with stress. They're not having this condition as a result of any form of mental weakness.
Yes, and I really like it as well. I know we've talked about it before, really in terms of the approachability of that term. And it really isn't just about the terms, but it really talks about what is happening here. We read about it daily, and certainly we've talked about it here on The Healthy Mind in other interviews, the absolute effects of stress, not just in depression and anxiety, which really is a physical reaction that happens as well, but also in physical illness as well. I really like that term, and I guess the logical question here, as we've been talking, and we've hinted about both individual patients and medical professionals, therapy professionals, why the hesitation to, especially within the medical community, why the resistance to allowing that to be in the discussion, to even be talking about it? Why even in 2012, today, there's so much resistance?
I think people find it difficult to believe just how ill you can become from quote-unquote mere stress. I've had patients who've been in the hospital for, two patients, in fact, in the hospital for 77 days each, purely as a result of a stress-related illness, one of them with uncontrollable vomiting, and the other one was receiving enough morphine every day that it was comparable to what an end-stage cancer patient would receive. So these are extreme levels of illness that can be produced by stress, and people just find it difficult to imagine that this is even possible until the patient get better, the way I was fortunate to do.
I would imagine the other part too as well might be stigma, and maybe what that would mean if you were labeled. I guess part of even what you have felt about someone being labeled psychosomatic, I mean, this person may feel, gosh, I'm crazy. Like, they feel like there's something horribly wrong with them mentally. And that really isn't the case about anything that you're trying to do and trying to achieve.
Yeah, medical professionals find it difficult to bring this up with patients. They feel automatically like they're casting aspersions on the patient, that they're being negative about the patient's mental fortitude when they bring this up. The patients themselves feel like they're being accused of imagining the symptoms or of doing it to themselves. And none of these things are true, but we haven't taught medical professionals how to discuss this subject with patients. And it's understandable. It took me a number of years to learn how to have a conversation about this with patients that patients wouldn't resent. But once you learn how to do that, then you can move forward. Once you convince someone that, yes, this is a physiologic process, no, you're not mentally weak, no, you're not doing this to yourself, these symptoms are absolutely real and not imaginary, all we need to do is uncover the stress that's in your life that you're not fully recognizing, and we can move forward with successful treatment. And once people hear it in those terms, they're very accepting of it. But we haven't taught the medical profession how to have the conversation in that way.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by when you talk about the various places where you've spoken. And really, ladies and gentlemen, when I say this in the introduction, that Dr. Clark is an international authority on this, you've literally spoken around the world about this particular phenomenon of stress illness. And it's very interesting because when you talk about it, almost every time you talk about it in those venues, people are very receptive. And you've spoken to professionals of all types. What do you think is the missing key there? Or share with us your experience of what it's like, how you're received.
Well, it's received very well. People frequently will say to me after the meeting or will write in their comments that they've never heard of this before. that they can immediately think of three or four patients in their practice that they've seen in the previous week that fit right into this category that I'm describing.
Yes.
So you take, you know, every primary care clinician in the United States and in around the world, multiply that by three or four patients a week, and you've got, you know, vast numbers. And those are just the ones that they're that are obvious. There are a lot more of these patients that have this condition where it's not obvious. They do not appear to be particularly stressed out. They appear for all the world like they've got a diseased organ is responsible for their symptom. It's only when you start asking a few leading questions, looking into the hidden stresses, that you learn that, yes, indeed, there are a lot more patients with this problem than you think.
Yes, and I think out of that frustration that you've seen, in terms of at least in your own way of being able to reach as many people as possible, was born this idea of the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association. So I guess let's talk about that a little bit. What was the inspiration there? And tell us a little bit about what's been happening with the PPDA.
Well, we, as you know, we started 3 years ago with a conference in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that was put on by John Strax and Howard Schubiner. Dr. Strax now at Northwestern, Dr. Schubiner at Wayne State. And that conference brought together about four dozen people from around the country with expertise in this field. And a smaller group of us after that conference kept on talking to each other by teleconference or by email, feeling that we wanted to do more, that there was such an injustice for these patients, that there were millions upon millions of them who were being inadequately treated. And so we put together another conference in Los Angeles in 2010 and began talking to each other even more, that we needed to do something on a permanent basis. And out of that, a group of about eight of us, and you're one of them,
yes,
co-founded the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association, came into being over a year ago now. And the reason behind that is that we needed a vehicle that was going to be around for a long time, that wouldn't depend on just a few enthusiastic individuals, but would be able to gather support from the broader community of professionals that work in this field, and that would also be a source for financial support that people could trust, that we are a 501c3 corporation with a nonprofit status from the IRS, and we can receive tax-deductible donations from Americans. And we need that financial support and volunteer support if we're going to be able to change this situation of inadequate care for these patients. So we're talking about on the order of 5 million people that have this condition, that it's been a clinical dilemma, a huge source of needless suffering for thousands of years in the medical profession, and it's never been changed. In order for us to effect a permanent improvement in the care of these patients is going to take a tremendous effort, and we need a vehicle for that effort, and a vehicle for financial and volunteer support, and a nonprofit corporation is a good start for that.
I think it's a beautiful start for that. And I've told you this before, but I really do appreciate your energy, and it's motivating. It's really motivating our entire group. All of us are there on a volunteer basis. I think Dr. Clark has taken it a step further. He does have his book, They Can't Find Anything Wrong, which can be found on his website, stressillness.com. All of the profits from that book, all royalties in anywhere that he speaks, goes to the PPDA nonprofit. So it really is an amazing thing to do in both the formation of the PPDA and in everything that you're hoping to accomplish with it. And I do want to talk about the book a little bit, but tell us a little bit about the conference that's coming up in New York City. My goodness, October 6th. I mean, we are weeks away from it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this will be our third conference. It's less than a month away now. It already has well over 100 people signed up for it, and our brochures are just hitting people's mailboxes this week. It's October 6th, all day long. You can get more information about it from the website, ppdassociation.org. It's going to be in New York City at the New York Academy of Medicine, and we have some of the leading experts in the United States, and in fact the world, are going to be speaking at this conference, and sharing their wisdom with the people who attend. So we're very excited about it. We think it's going to help launch the PPD Association. And just as a measure of the quality of conference that we put together, we are co-sponsored by New York University.
Yes, it's going to be wonderful. NYU, New York University, being so gracious to partner with us, and really we're honored to have that together with NYU and the PPDA. Tell us a little bit, obviously you've crystallized this all in your book, but tell us a little bit of what you found. I mean, I know the principles, I've read the book, but maybe if you could tell us a little bit about They Can't Find Anything Wrong, some of the key principles that you discuss about stress illness, and we'll put up all the links. I believe you're already on our links at The Healthy Mind, but we'll put them in the show notes as well. But a very important book if you're looking for a concise read on mind, body, and what you can do with stress and illness. And really, I couldn't recommend it more, but please tell us a little bit more about those key points.
Well, I wrote the book with an individual in mind who doesn't have access to a healthcare professional that knows about psychophysiologic disorders or knows about stress illness. And I wanted a person to be able to read this and be able to teach themselves about the hidden stresses that are responsible for their condition. And the way I chose to do that, and different authors have approached this in different ways, but the way I chose to do it was to put about four dozen stories in the book, which are carefully selected from the 7,000 plus that I've seen over the years, and designed to illustrate the full spectrum of all the different kinds of hidden stresses that are capable of causing real physical symptoms. And the idea there is that an individual who's reading this will be able to find at least one of the stories that they can identify with, and they will be able to say, you know, this really sounds like me. Because the key is to be able to see something in your own life in a way that you didn't see it before, to recognize that the magnitude of the stress is much greater than you thought. Because once you understand that, then it's there to be worked on. There are treatment possibilities that are nearly always effective in reducing that level of stress. And when that happens, usually the physical illness also improves. And when people see that, they know they're on the right track. If they identify the stress, treat the stress, bring the stress level down, and then their illness improves, that's, you know, well on the way to a confirmed diagnosis, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and it really is in terms of the power of that validation, certainly in your book, individuals being able to read that and say, hey, I'm not alone here in this. I know I've had Dr. Schubiner on and Dr. Sarno and many others have talked about this. There is so much power in that validation and somebody saying, wait, and someone like yourself who's dedicated their career to this, wait, these are real individuals that went through this, and this is how they came through it. It can be very, very powerful. And certainly in everything that you, that we, that all of us can do to get the word out about this overlay of stress and illness, it really is an epidemic. We really have to be working as hard as possible.
Yeah, it's as roughly as common as diabetes. But if we were to manage diabetes with the same quality of care that we manage PPD or stress illness, I mean, there would be a national outcry. Yes. It would be a disaster for the diabetics. And just the way it's a disaster for people with PPD. Some of them suffer for over 10 years with this with no diagnosis. And that just simply shouldn't be acceptable.
Yes, and you know, we've talked about this so many times on The Healthy Mind. Even if it isn't from the emotional part that pulls you in, we know now with research study after research study, the impact of stress on diabetes, like you just talked about. What I try to inform my individuals, my patients, everything I'm trying to do with The Healthy Mind, if you feel better emotionally, that's great. But the things we talk about here don't have reverberations just in the emotions. We're finding finding out and getting it validated with what individuals like you knew for decades before, that the emotions impact some of the most common medical illnesses that we face as a country and really throughout the world. Hypertension, diabetes, say nothing about chronic pain, inflammatory illnesses, GI illnesses. I mean, I think it's something you knew in your own way for many, many years, but it's got to feel very validating to see that, well, they're starting to put it together, and it's nice that they've been able to put it together and catch up.
Yeah, there's clearly going to be benefits to people's, not only how they feel, but to their physical health long term from identifying and reducing these sources of stress. Right there in Columbus, there are two of the leading researchers in the world on the effect of stress on the immune system. They're showing impacts on the lymphocyte function. Lymphocyte is a white blood cell in the circulation that is very important to the function of the immune system. And when an individual is under stress, the function of that lymphocyte is depressed. And that clearly has an impact on all kinds of physical conditions, both short-term and long-term. So these approaches that we're developing in the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association are going to have physical benefits as well as emotional ones.
Yeah, I really believe that as well. I mean, I could go on and talk with you for hours, but in closing, if individuals want to get in touch with you or find out more about you, about the PPDA, about stress illness, your book, what's the best thing for them to do?
They can go to the stressillness.com, which is my website, and there's an About the Author page, and there's a way to email me from there, very easy, and I do respond to my emails. And they can also get more information at ppdassociation.org. Especially after the conference is over, we're going to have time to put more and more information on that site that will be valuable for patients.
And ladies and gentlemen, when I say this, it's true. Dr. Clark has been a leading voice when it comes to mind-body disorders, stress illness, the effect of stress on illness. I really urge you, if you have the chance, please visit ppdassociation.org or Dr. Clark's website, stressillness.com, or just Google David Clark, MD, and you'll see the decades of wisdom and experience that he brings to this discussion. We will absolutely have all the links up on the show notes, and he is also on our links page. Dr. Clark, I cannot thank you enough. I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on to The Healthy Mind, and I hope that this is just the first of many visits to the Healthy Mind podcast.
Thank you, Peter. You're doing great work with your website, and the whole PPD community appreciates it.
Well, thank you, sir. I really do appreciate that. Thank you again for joining us. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. David Clark, founder and president of the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association. Wow, what an incredible mind, isn't he? Just the experience that he brings to the table, decades of doing this work at a time where no one or very few people were thinking about this mind-body connection and the fact that stress and emotions could echo back into the physical body. Just a great, great interview. I'm so happy he was able to join us. I hope that you really enjoyed that. And believe me, you're going to be hearing a lot more about psychophysiologic disorders, PPD, stress illness, and the mind-body connection. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it again. We've made it through yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. One final thanks again to Dr. David Clark. I really can't thank him enough for joining us here on The Healthy Mind podcast. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. I haven't talked about this, but I've started a monthly newsletter. And if you're interested in getting that, you can go right to the homepage where it says sign up for email alerts. Just give me your email address and I'll be happy to send you off the monthly newsletter that kind of recaps everything at The Healthy Mind. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter as well. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions or comments you may have, email me. I want to hear from you. and that email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.